Hello, everyone. My name is Ron Way, and I'm the host of Author Talk and the Rising Light Media websites, where you hear the podcast of the most fascinating authors in religion and spiritual realm. This week, we're going to air part two of our interview with the number one best-selling New York Times author, Dr. Jeffrey Long. His first best-selling book was called Evidence of an Afterlife. And I've had the honor of introducing him not only today to you, but last week. And if you didn't hear part one, I recommend that you stop what you're doing right now. Go back to part one, because we're doing this sequentially, and I think it'll make a lot more sense, but both are fascinating. We're exploring his new book called God and the Afterlife, the groundbreaking new evidence of God and near-death experience. And of course, as I mentioned last week, he hit the New York Times best-selling nonfiction list for a second time. Welcome back, Dr. Long, to Author Talk and the Rising Light media sites.
Well, Ron, it's a pleasure to be here.
I want to pick up right where we left off, folks, if that's okay with you, because at that time we were right in the middle of 12 different common elements that occur during an NDE. And I'll let the doctor pick up with some of these and talk to you about it. But near-death experience is an NDE, I'm sorry. But we ended up with encountering, in the first segment, encountering mystical brilliant light. And then we talked about encountering deceased relatives or friends or mystical beings.
Yeah, absolutely. Ron, that's some of the most inspiring things that are described in near-death experiences are when they encounter people that they knew and loved in their earthly life but had died. Even if these people died of advanced age or chronic disfiguring illness, they're essentially always picture-perfect health. However strained the earthly relation was, these are essentially always joyous reunions, a great deal of dialogue and sharing, and how about this for inspiring? Very commonly, deceased beloved pets are encountered, again, in picture-perfect health. So this is some of the most dramatic descriptions that we have of near-death experiences that can certainly be very influential to these folks afterwards. Certainly, going on, they have often an alteration of time or space. In fact, typically, those that have a near-death experience say that time, as we know it in our earthly life, simply does not exist during near-death experiences. For example, they may describe events that in earthly time would have taken hours or even beyond a day, and yet they may have been unconscious or clinically dead for only a few minutes. One of the more interesting things, Ron, in near-death experiences are what's called a life review. They may see part or even all of their prior life during a near-death experience. Typically described as images that flash very quickly. And in fact, from a research point of view, I was interested in discovering when they see, say, events early in their life, are these real? Did they really happen? And in the 84 near-death experiences that I reviewed that had a life review, every single time they described for their prior life memories, they really occurred. None of it was unreal, hallucinatory, even if they encountered something very early in life, which they'd forgotten, if they checked with their parents, bam, they found out it really happened.
Well, that's important because that doesn't happen in dreams.
Oh, gosh, no. In fact, here's another thing in a life review that doesn't happen in dreams, Ron. They may not only be aware of their prior life and other people that they interacted with, but in a very, what we call, panoramic life review, they may also be aware of the interaction with that other person from the first-person perspective of the person they were interacting with. Mm. That's correct. I mean, they're seeing, hearing, talking, and literally feeling what the interaction felt like from the person that they were interacting with in earthly life. And, of course, you'll never have a dream like that. I certainly have. Just one more of the validating things about near-death experiences that we see over and over here.
How about next one? I'm looking at the list, too. Encountering otherworldly heavenly realms.
Oh, the unworldly heavenly realms are just beautiful. Just when I started researching near-death experiences, I just loved reading what they would describe about these unearthly, and I think it's apt to use the term heavenly, realms. They may have landscapes with flowers, plants, that have colors that are so beautiful that they don't exist on earth. There may be music that is unearthly in its beauty and majesty. Gorgeous buildings have been described. Of course, other beings there. I mean, it is literally what I think any of us would if you sat down and thought about what heaven really should look like, what they're describing fits it to a T. Very beautiful, unearthly realms that they describe there. And the whole time that they're there, almost all the time, they have profound feelings of peace and love, two most common words used to describe near-death experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have a sense, interestingly, that in that unearthly world, that heavenly realm, that that is their real home. That's where they really belong. And that makes them certainly very endearing and very bonding, even if all of their prior life they only knew their earthly existence.
Well, I'm going to skip a couple numbers here, because then that just takes me straight to a voluntary or involuntary return to the body. Because even though it's so beautiful and it's so lovely, most of the people don't really want to come back, but they have to.
And that's the surprising thing, Ron. And you hit it right on the head there. Even though they may have lived years, typically decades of their earthly life, I mean, think of it. Everything that they knew, loved, and was familiar to them for years to decades was what they encountered during their earthly life. And yet here they are in this unearthly, heavenly realm, there for seemingly a relatively brief period of time, and yet the great majority of those having near-death experiences absolutely do not want to return to their body. They feel that that heavenly realm is their real home. They don't want to stay. Sometimes they will argue, and rather forcefully, I've noted, with the spiritual beings around them, expressing their desire that they do not want to leave. They don't want to come back. Now, certainly some near-death experiencers are simply sent back involuntarily, but if they have a choice, the great majority of the time, they want to stay put right there in that heavenly realm.
Well, then let me ask you a question. Did you ever take it a step further, or did you, where the lessons learned, if you will, from them while they were on that side, talk about coming back a second time to a new body, reincarnation in effect?
There's significant evidence for reincarnation and near-death experiences. I've had near-death experiencers share, when they talk about life reviews, sometimes they'll talk about life's reviews even prior to their earthly life, and it's been rather striking to me that it seems remarkably credible. I mean, you and I and your listeners wouldn't believe it if they talked about how they were Cleopatra in a prior lifetime. You'd never see that. But what they do describe, for example, would be life in, say, a medieval city. Now, it's nothing like Disney with tall spires and beautiful, spacious landscapes. The real life in medieval cities was ugly, dirty, and very difficult, and people lived a short while. And that's exactly what this one near-death experience that I'm thinking about was describing when they reviewed a prior life that they believed they lived in the medieval times.
Wow. All right. Well, someday when we're privately talking, I'll tell you about experience that I had that did the same darn thing.
Wow. Sure.
Oh, yeah. It was amazing. Here's another one that kind of buffaloed me. They gain or learn, have special knowledge while they're on that side, but they seem to lose it when they come back.
Yeah. During their near-death experience, especially in the unearthly realms, they become aware of what's been referred to as universal knowledge. They seem to know anything and everything vastly beyond our knowledge that we have here on Earth. And they sort of an aha moment to them. They say, this is how it all fits together. Here's the details of how the universe, say, came into being, what's going on, how it works, mathematics, art, you name it. They have they're convinced they have a very deep and profound grasp of it. And yet, when they come back to their earthly body, they almost always retain very little and typically none of it. For example, as one near-death experiencer said, it's like trying to put an ocean of knowledge into the teacup that's our physical brains. It just doesn't fit.
Yeah, I'm actually, ladies and gentlemen, you hear the flipping around. I'm actually flipping through his book, because would you allow me to read just one of those experiences that you listed? And then you can kind of comment.
Oh, please do, Ron.
Because this kind of had everything in it. And I'm just going to read this. And this was from Christy C., who suffered a cardiac arrest during gallbladder surgery and went on to have a profound NDE. Here is her description of the event. I was standing over the doctor, watching them work on me. I wasn't scared, but fascinated. They were working extremely fast, and I felt amused because I was no longer in pain. Then I was pulled backwards into a tunnel with a door that opened into a spectacular light. The light was brilliant, but it didn't hurt. I passed into it, and it glowed with warmth, love, understanding, and knowledge. The knowledge of everything made sense. Everything was vivid. The colors were brighter and deeper. Everything was tranquil and peaceful when I crossed into the light. Then I was in a lush meadow covered with flowers and trees. I felt a strong presence, and I also knew my family was with me. The presence had a deep voice that resonated to the core of my soul. I don't remember what the voice said, but the peacefulness and the calmness magnified. I wanted to cross the small free-flowing stream, but I wasn't allowed to. I wanted to stay in the meadow. I didn't want to go back because I knew that the peace, warmth, and light wouldn't go back with me. I tried to walk toward the stream, but I was pulled down and back through the tunnel door. I left the warm glow of the light and was filled with an immense sadness for all of the knowledge and peace left me. My senses dimmed and my vision became muddy compared to the brilliance of the meadow. Now, in all your experiences, Doctor, why do they lose that wonderful feeling? Why can't we bring it back with us? What the heck are we doing here in this gross physical world?
Yeah, good question. Certainly the senses they have during a near-death experience are so powerful that you're not in a physical body in near-death experiences, and the realm you're in is not like a separate, independent, three-dimensional realm like we know. It seems to be non-physical, often is used, described as energy. And so as a result of that, I think people can see far better. In fact, people have described 360-degree vision, which is interesting. They can see front, back, up, down, right, left, all simultaneously.
It's almost like an awareness. Have total awareness.
Total awareness, and your communication is instantaneous. And it's literally very, very different from anything that we're familiar with. So it's really, you can just imagine their sadness of leaving a realm like that. And then on top of that, they so often feel that realm they're in, not as an alien, unearthly realm, they feel it as their true home. So you can just imagine how tough it is for near-death experiencers to leave an environment like that and return to their earthly body.
Well, why though? I mean, why are we here then? Why can't we just stay in the heaven world or in the spirit world then, where it's so beautiful? Okay, you hear me. How did Ron run out of words here?
What are we doing here?
Yes.
Well, and that's a really good question. In fact, I asked that directly in a survey question. I asked very directly if they had encountered any information about life's meaning or purpose during their near-death experience. Because I was curious, too. This seems so separate, so far apart, so different, so very, very much something very different and very lesser than what's described in near-death experiences. So when I asked that key question on the most recent version of the survey, did you encounter any specific information or awareness regarding earthly life's meaning or purpose, is the exact question I asked. To my abject startlement, about 36.4% of near-death experiencers said yes. Yes, they did encounter that. And here's what they came up with. Awareness, I think most importantly, that yes, our earthly lives really are meaningful. And I think we've all asked ourselves if that's really true at one time or another. But what's really important here? Love is an important foundation of meaning in our earthly lives, very consistently seen in the narrative responses to that question. And also in the narrative responses to that question, and we had way over 100 narrative responses to review, relationships, particularly loving relationships with others, seem to be a very important part of life's meaning or purpose. Now, interestingly, when they became aware of our earthly, life's purpose, they almost never came back with what we would have conventionally thought, to make more money, to have a great job, to be a doctor, for goodness sakes, no. Any of the things that we have as barometers of success conventionally in this world was essentially never described as being a part of Earth's meaning and purpose when they were having near-death experiences and getting specific information about it.
Did you run into any indication that the Eastern philosophies, where they think that coming back life after life, we are progressing, we're learning, and it's a learning world, and then we go back and we absorb these lessons, kind of like when you mentioned in your book that these people review their lives.
Yeah. Living their lives again, reincarnation. I absolutely did not believe in reincarnation when I started my research, but I base my views on evidence, and so now, yes, I do believe that reincarnation certainly can happen. And in fact, as a overview to all this, I would remind your listeners that if you really believe we're in an infinite universe, I think you have to be a little bit cautious about stating something that on an absolute term that cannot happen. I think if we're really in an infinite universe, I think virtually all possibilities can exist, and that would include reincarnation. So, you know, certainly that's a part of it. I think if, as best I can tell from my research, the life lessons are so important that if we miss the mark, don't get it right this time, we have that opportunity to try again, different time, different place, get different life, because again, the meaning and purpose of our earthly lives really seems to be that critical.
I would be remiss if I didn't ask a question that some of them out there in the audience are thinking to themselves and are terrified for. I found it interesting that although the great majority of NDEs from your book, almost 65% are filled with light and love, period, there are a third of these experiences were mixed or frightening. Can you talk a bit about the mixed experiences and tell us about them? What happened in these NDEs?
Oh, the mixed experiences where there's some degree of fright could be all over the board. I mean, good gosh, you've lived all your earthly life, you know, with your point of conscious reference in your head, and all of a sudden your point of conscious reference in a near-death experience is over your body. So for some people, that's very frightening. Here's another example, just for instance. We had a near-death experiencer who coded and was being, his heart stopped. It was being rushed in an ambulance to the hospital. His consciousness was above the ambulance, and certainly moving at a high speed, paralleling the ambulance, and angels appeared. Several angels appeared and were going around him. Now, you and I, and I think your listeners would say, oh, that's beautiful. But he was frightened of these angels and started batting at them.
So, oh, my gosh.
People are funny. You just never know what's going to scare them. And I think if they're in an unfamiliar circumstance, many are going to be frightened. But the overwhelming emotion that is expressed during near-death experiences almost uniformly is not fright, but is that love, peace, secure, warmth, happiness feeling that we see so consistently throughout thousands of near-death experiences.
Yet there were a small portion, I forgot what it was, maybe 4 or 5%, that had terrifying, absolute hellish experiences. Could you tell us about those?
And correct. Very popular
question.
Can
explain that. Of course.
Shows. Of course, 1% of near-death experiences in my research were either aware of hellish type of content from a distance or were actually experienced themselves. And these were very frightening, often classic hellish experiences, frightening, malevolent beings, a sense of very negative emotions, and often vividly described. Now, in saying all that, the obvious question is going to be, well, why does that happen? If you ask the people that had these hellish encounters during their near-death experiences, very commonly they'll say that they had issues that they needed to face in their life and that there was no other way that they would have had an experience that would have allowed them to confront these issues to live the rest of their life more loving, good people. The substantial majority of people, even those that have had these kind of hellish near-death experiences, do not believe that any of us are headed for a permanent involuntary hell. They just simply say that was a passage that they had to go through personally, and they can often grow and be more loving people. And in fact, let's not forget, over the centuries, the saints have had the dark nights of the soul, often including frightening or hellish encounters themselves. I have yet to see God or any other spiritual being condemn anybody in an unearthly realm, in a heavenly realm, to hell. We seem to have thank goodness, an overwhelming, loving, compassionate, and forgiving God. And so I would emphasize to your listeners that based on evidence, I think hellish near-death experiences, while they're real, are nothing to be frightened about. I think the people that are in those realms, these spiritual beings, made that choice to be there. And it's a form of spiritual sickness. As long as we don't have any profound spiritual sickness in the afterlife, we'll all be together in that blissful, wonderful afterlife.
Folks, when we were in between, after the first interview, before we got started in the second, offline, although most of it was recorded here, I was asking the good doctor about Christianity, because most of our listeners, I would say probably 80%, are of a Christian background that read the books and listen to the interviews. And I was asking him about that. But folks, that's going to be an outtake, and it's going to be a bonus segment. So right after this, you'll find a little bonus segment on the website. So if you're interested in what the good doctor thinks about exclusivity in heaven and Jesus, you're going to have to tune in, aren't you? That'll just make for a fun little extra. Ladies and gentlemen, and Dr. Long, we've done it again. We've run out of time. Wow. What a subject, folks. Find out what hundreds of thousands of readers have found out in reading Dr. Long's book, or books, both of them. You start them and you can't put them down. I couldn't anyway. Look at the website that you're listening to the interview on, the podcast, and click on the cover of both of Dr. Long's books. You'll be miraculously transformed to Amazon Books, where you can join me in becoming a fan of the good Dr. Long. The name of Dr. Long's latest book, for reference, is God in the Afterlife, the groundbreaking new evidence for God and near-death experiences. But he's so famous, type in Dr. Long, God in the Afterlife, you're going to get there. Thank you, Dr. Jeffrey Long, for appearing on Author Talk with me today, and thank you for agreeing to stay on for part two of our interviews. It's been a wonderful afternoon with you.
Ron, fantastic interview. Greatly appreciated, and thank you so much.
Ladies and gentlemen, another week has come to an end. That's it. So I'm saying I want you to join me next week when we're going to interview another fascinating author. Until next week then, when we meet again, I remain faithfully yours.